podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Coach Unplugged is brought to you by great people over at teachhoops.com. For coaches who want to get better. From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. Here is your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged, brought to you by the great people over at teachhoops.com. For coaches who want to get better, vast resources, videos, practice plans. I can't even count how many mini lessons I've got on, from dealing with parents to preseason to postseason evaluations, all that stuff, anything you would ever need, one-on-one calls, office hours, you name it, we got it. If we don't, we'll get it for you or help you get it. Go over and check it out, 14-day free trial. I'm super excited for this week. We're talking to Rick Torbert. He is the creator of Read and React Offense. This is the longest in the history of Coach Unplugged, the longest podcast that we have done. It was almost 2 hours. So we are going to break it up into three separate sections. So we're going to have three podcasts this week. It will be one each day. I'm not going to throw it all at you. I think it kind of breaking it up into pieces make it easier for people to go back and figure out where everything is. So if you're liking these things, please subscribe and like. Go down and leave a review. We would really appreciate that. All right, here's Rick. All right, welcome to Coach Unplugged. I got Coach Torbert here. So I'm super excited about this from a couple standpoints. Selfishly, I started running Read and React about 3 years ago. So I'm looking at my list. I think I have like six specific questions about Read and React, but we'll get to that. All right, so Coach, I'm going to have you kind of introduce yourself, kind of talk about your basketball journey and kind of what got us to the point where we're sitting here talking today.
Right. My basketball journey began, let's see, I'll make this short and sweet.
All right.
There's not a lot there.
There's a lot.
Well, let's see. Probably the pivotal point in my life was I was 6'1" as an eighth grader. Everybody thought I was going to be some big center, you know?
Right, yep.
I think I grew one more inch or another inch and a half. And I found out there were plenty of people that could play inside better than me. So between my freshman and sophomore year, I spent the whole summer just dedicated to shooting only. And that kind of changed the course of my life. I wound up being a pretty good shooter, good enough to go and play at the next level. You know, NAIA, played at Cleveland State Junior College. I played at Bryan College.
But there's a very valuable lesson there, especially for the youth coaches, I think, in the sense that I believe everyone should be a guard until they're about 14 or 15.
Absolutely.
Don't you? I mean, we can get into the positionless thing, but everybody that's listening to this, I bet can think about that kid that grew in elementary school and was the tallest kid on the playground and then just stopped. We all can probably name like two or three of those kind of kids.
And Steve, that is why I include that in the story. It hindered me. The way I was pigeonholed early on through elementary and junior high, even as a freshman in high school, it's hard to overcome that, even if you're dedicated from there on. Because in college, I'm a two guard, and sometimes I'm a point.
Right. And
you're seriously
hindered. And it's like, I've coached guys that have played in the NBA. I've coached bigs. And it's like, yes, I just keep telling them, you might have to rebound more than you're going to rebound at the next level, but it will help. You know, if everyone can handle the ball, no one can press us kind of things. But so then go ahead. So then I see you got into coaching.
Yeah, I stepped right out of college into a head high school boys job in public schools in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Chattanooga Central and Little Wall High School. And then I took a job in Atlanta at a private school, small private school. And then after a few years there, I went to Holy Innocents Episcopal School because they were starting a school from scratch, a high school from scratch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were kindergarten through eight, and I kind of thought, oh, that'd be cool to start, you know, from the beginning. And hey, if it, I can't blame anybody but myself, you know.
Right, right, yeah. You know what's coming, yes.
Yep. So I was there for my last 11 years, and when I say that there's not much there, what I mean is, I think look, I mean, I had good years and I've had bad. I've had, you know, never won a state championship, but made it to the Final Four a couple of times, and you know, quite
for
a few.
Somebody that's won it, it's lightning in a bottle. I'm convinced. It's like the kid that catches the firefly. Because my best team didn't win it. My best team had three Mr. Basketballs from Wisconsin, and we didn't win it that year. And then we won it the next year. It's not the best coaches, not the best team. It's about those two or three weeks where you just catch lightning. It's Hoosiers kind of thing. Yeah. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're exactly right. And I've been on the losing end, you know. I've been on those where my worst season was a 4-23. Yeah. That'll make you question everything.
You become very humble at that point. Yeah.
I'm telling you, man. And I coached my hiney off, and I tell you, I thought I should have got coach of the year because we shouldn't have won those four.
Right. Oh, I tell people my best record, we were 12-10. My best coaching season in 30 years of coaching, we were 12-10 because we had no right being winning 12 games. We had zero, you know. So that's why I tell coaches, it's not – and I've told people this before. I think the problem with our profession is you're judged on quantitative values. Because I see your math teacher, you're judged on quantitative values, not qualitative values.
That's right.
And as a coach, it's to be honest with you, I coach and teach because it's the qualitative things. It's not I want to win as much as anybody. Trust me. But it's teaching young men or young women to be, you know, become better people and life lessons and all that kind of stuff.
And that is the problem with coaching is that you've got you're judging success qualitatively, and people that might be controlling your job,
right,
and your livelihood are judging it quantitatively,
right.
There's a lot of things they don't take into factors. Because I tell you, when I say I made it to the Final Four, that's hilarious because I've never made a shot. I never defended.
Right.
Really good players. And I remember the first trip to the Final Four, the night we won Elite Eight to go to the Final Four, you know, you get all the back slapping and all that, right?
Yeah.
And one guy, a friend of mine, said, I just kind of as he's passing by, he says, and now you're a genius.
Yeah, you know everything. You know everything.
Right.
Yes.
Tongue in cheek, because, man, you just.
Okay, so all right, so then, so you're still coaching there right now?
No.
Okay.
No. excuse me. So there was a 2 or 3 year overlap in the early 2000s where a former assistant of mine wanted to start an internet company, sell DVDs. And I told him I would help and help him if he ever needed it. So he asked me for
it. Right.
And he said, I want you to do the basketball instructions. And I said, man, you're going to get like 3 sales, you know, my mom, my dad, my sister.
Right.
You know, who am I, you know?
Right.
And he said, well, you know, he'd been with me for a while, and he said, you know, I've seen you teach. And he said, if I can get people to view the material, I think your ability to break it down will bring them back. So, hey, why not, right? So I gave it a shot. And we started with shooting, ball handling, you know, post play, one-on-one, just player development stuff.
Right.
And this is in the excuse me, this is in the early 2000s. And then we got a few guests on our DVDs. Back then it was all DVDs.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was talking to Brendan yesterday. It was hilarious because it's like him and I were laughing about, I remember when I had 2 VHS tapes and 2 recorders and play, record, you know, to break tape down. It's like these guys don't know how good. I mean, it's, now it goes up to crossover or huddle and it breaks it down. It's like, shoot, oh. I'm still surprised I'm married, to be honest with you, all the time I spent breaking tape down. But
it was so time intensive. It was unreal.
Yeah.
And in one of my stories, talking about later as we get into the Read and React, you know, one year, I think it was 96, at the end of the season, I decided, hey, I'm going back and I'm statting all of my games myself. I wanted to see where all our points were coming from, try to categorize everything. Didn't want to depend on stats that, you know, some
right. Yep.
In the bleachers, you know, yep. kept up with and missed while he was eating popcorn. and folks, I don't think they appreciate what it took to go back and take a DVD. I mean, I'm sorry, VHS.
Right.
In that time. VHS, you know, fast forward, rewind, pause, write down, you know.
Right. And there's more than what they don't understand is there's more than one thing going on when you're watching on a thing. It's like there's a rebound, there's an assist, there's a turnover, there's a – it's like you're – yeah. There's no iPad to hit a button and just
– Right. Right. Yeah. Oh, something like a huddle or crossover, that would have just been
– Oh, yeah. Awesome. I tell people it saved my life. It saved my marriage, saved my life. I'm not in the basement anymore breaking film down. Okay, so you started that. We'll get to the Read React thing at the end because I got, like I said, I do have a lot of questions. Okay. But so then that's obviously went from DVDs to.
Yeah, well, we started, like I say, player development stuff. That's what I cut my teeth on. My first one was on shooting, naturally.
Right.
And most of this, Steve, came from, I had coaching insights and that type of thing, but most of it came from my experience in personal training, while I was coaching. And that's where, if you're going to make a business out of that, you've got to actually, you might start doing it off of the cuff, but eventually you got to, what's the word? Codify.
You got to quantify it, and it's time for money too. It's like it's time for money too. And if you're not gonna be able to book all that time if you don't have, you know, your lesson plans right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I had to go like step by step. You know, I had to start writing things down, and hey, what works, what doesn't, and developing a player, and so that's what I was putting on the DVD, and we happened to. Start getting a few NBA and WNBA guests on the DVDs, you know.
Okay.
Mike Bibby was the first one.
I remember that one.
And then we got, you know.
Yes, didn't you have some young kid too, I think?
Oh, that was our ball handling.
Yeah.
Our ball handling, Andy Garcia. And by the way, he's just phenomenal with a basketball right now. He's in his mid-20s, I guess, and he's still in Laredo, Texas, and he's training. He's never stopped training other kids.
Really?
Wow. Well, he's got a training business.
Okay.
And he's just magic with a ball.
But, I remember him.
The thing is, the great story behind that is I had one DVD out shooting, you know? Now, I'm still coaching at the time. And in the summer – I have this guy from Laredo. It was Andy's dad, Andy Garcia. And he's, could I convince you to come out here and train my son for a few days, you know, maybe a week? And, well, if the price is right, I will,
So this
is kind of neat. I get to cross the Mississippi River and go to a place in Texas and move in. This is kind of neat.
Yep.
And kid just was – a workout king. I mean, the kid could work all day on his game. But when I saw him handle the ball, I said, I made a guy on the phone, called my buddy and said, hey, I know what DVD number two is.
Yes.
Seventh grade, and he's just unbelievable with the ball.
Right. And, yeah. Our Mr. Basketball this year, Jordan McCabe, who's going to Cincy, has been doing that since he was a little kid. And he's the same way. It's like, oh my, it's like magic what they do with the ball.
Yeah.
So then it expanded from that stuff.
Yeah. I wound up with it in 2000. By 2008, I think we had seven player development DVDs, and that, and when, right. that doesn't sound like much at the time, but when you do, at that time we were doing things like the one-on-one video was 3.5 hours,
right?
Because it wasn't just me on one-on-one. I also had Chauncey Billups. I had Rick Barry on it. I had right. Sue Bird, you know, folks like that on.
And it was a different era too. You weren't shooting it on your phone. The editing was iMovie wasn't. I'm just saying, people think now it's like, oh, I can just shoot a video and edit. It was a different world back then, editing wise too, and all that stuff, and technology and taping and cameras and.
Yeah, you had to send your DVD off to be mastered and
right.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But during that, so the transition is back in 03 and 04.
Hey, everybody, I hope you're enjoying this as much as I am. There's so many small little golden nuggets that you're going to find. If you're liking these podcasts, please subscribe and like or leave a review. We would really appreciate that. Does not matter where you listen. It really helps us get out to more people and kind of move up that pecking order. And then make sure you go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better.
In that same place, Andy Garcia in Laredo, Texas, had put together a camp where he had recruited 15, just handpicked players from everywhere, a couple of European pros, about 5 or 6 college players, and the remaining 10 or 8 or 9 were high school. But they were from everywhere. I had a kid from Greece and Michigan and just from all over.
All over.
And they all came with a pedigree. You know what I mean? Like, they were the
best of the best.
It was a 4-week camp.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, by the way, Steve, never do this, okay?
I've gone to the PGC camp. I've gone to Manos camp to watch. Oh. And I'm tired after 4 days, and I'm just watching.
We were so ambitious. So we lived in the same motel, you know, hotel.
Right.
And our schedule was from 9 to 6, 5 days, and then half a day on Saturday.
Yeah.
And the kids went at night. They went to the local workout gym, physical gym, to do, you know, to be trained in weights and speed, agility, quickness. And
that's crazy. Youth is wasted on the young. I'm telling you, I used to do that stuff. I'd go from camp. I jump in my car. I go to the next camp. I jump in my car. I go to the next camp. Yeah, I don't. It just makes me tired thinking about it.
Oh yeah, but poor kids, man. About middle of the week, they got one gear.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they're just about toast. But we did all. You know, you do all the player development stuff. And then you come back from lunch. We had to take like a 2-hour for lunch.
Right.
You know? We had to, and for them to recover. And then we'd come back for another 4 hours. And we always finished it with clock and referees and games. And we had, the owner of the camp had, scheduled, I'll give you an example. He had scheduled the second tier Olympic team, Mexico's Olympic team, to come across the border and play us.
Wow.
So I'm going like, oh, okay, what am I going to teach these guys? Flex?
Right, you know, right.
These are all – every one of them is like a gunslinger. Like,
right. Hey, they're all the best players on their team. Yeah, they're all the best players on their team.
That's right. And so I'm thinking, what am I going to – and that's where the Read and React was birthed then. What I saw there just made me a believer. Let's just put it that way.
Right. And so just from a historical standpoint, so that's when you came up with the idea.
Yeah.
When did we get to the point where you felt confident that you actually had something that was, I mean, because like anything, there's the first light bulb and then there's the last light bulb.
Yes. I didn't even have a name for it in 03.
Right. Okay.
And see, I was going back to coach at that time.
Right. Yeah, you're just trying to keep the ship moving. Yeah.
Here's what's so weird is it was at that time that the company Better Basketball just took off.
Okay.
I mean, woo, took off. My partner said, look, we got to either fish or cut bait, you know, because you've either got to go full time if we're going to make a go at this, or he can't do it by himself. And so – And so I said, man, I put together this system that, you know, I'm absolutely convinced. Well, anyway, so I was not able to take it back to my team. So the next summer we had the same camp, whole different group of kids. And I said, okay, I got to test this again. All right.
Right.
Maybe it was a function of the kids, right?
Right. Yeah. You don't know. You're experimenting. Yeah.
Right. So this time I went in, I didn't have to discover it.
Right.
I went in from the beginning, right? And it's like, holy cow. So as soon as that 4 weeks was up, I called every friend that on every level of basketball, still coaching, and said, look, I got something. Don't even have a name for it. But and I can try and describe it, but if you want it, I'll show it to you, but I'm pretty sure it's a game changer, you know.
Right.
I think it'll give you an edge, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Well, you know, Steve, just think about you. Call, you know, who would you call? Look, the people I call trusted me that, I mean, I'm not even coaching at the time, right?
Right.
And so I had high school, middle school, girls, boys, you know, veteran coaches, you know.
Right. You wanted to send it out to the world to see what happens, too. It's like it's your first model. You got to send it out and see if the light bulb works or not, too.
And so first I gave it to them in notes. Guess what? They couldn't do it.
No.
Every time it was like, Rick, you're going to have to come and show us. I'd work with them through the summer, come work with them during their season. And that's when it dawned on me, okay, if I'm going to transfer this, I can't do it with notes and that type of thing.
Right.
With drawings, with diagrams. I'm going to have to put this on a DVD or
right.
that type of thing. And so it was really – so for 4 years, Steve, for 4 years, those coaches convinced me to put it out, to get it to public.
Right.
And one of them, he's retired now, Buster Brown, he had about the best girls' record in high school in state of Georgia, all classifications during the 90s, won a state championship. And he said, Rick, I don't want you to because I've got an edge now. This is a
right. weapon. Right.
But let's face it. He said, you've got something that the community needs to see. They need to get a hold of this.
Right.
And of course the feedback, now, the feedback that I was getting from these coaches was opening up, was just making me see other things.
Right. Okay? So that's the thing is you got to put it out there to see. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, you don't see it all at one time.
Right.
You don't. I mean, I'm not smart enough.
You can't. Well, you can't see the trees through the forest sometimes. You're so, I've started small businesses too. You're so like this. You're so narrow. People are listening, aren't seeing this. I'm putting my hands over my eyes. You're so narrow-minded because you see one thing, but there's six other things going on that you just can't see. Yeah.
Right. And you know something? This coach would teach it this way, and this coach would teach it that way. And another coach would call me and say, you know something? I found if I taught this first, then this became easier. I was just getting all that kind of feedback, you know? And I thought, all right, listen, I had another friend that said, if you try to wait until it's perfect, you'll never ship it.
Yes, yeah, because nothing's ever perfect, yes.
That's right. He said, hey, ship it, get it out there. And I really am not trying to be, this is not a case of false humility. I really sincerely believe, and I still do. You know, there are coaches that are just so much smarter than me on so many levels. If I could just get it out there and get it in their hands, they would see things that I didn't see.
Right.
And maybe we could all stand on each other's shoulders and kind of change the paradigm. This was kind of my vision.
Right.
This is kind of what motivates me. Motivated me then, motivates me now is the vision of, you know something, I may be able to impact the game for kids and coaches in a very positive way, maybe make the game. I had just heard Kevin Eastman say in a clinic at Coaching You Live, okay, right in the middle of his time in the clinic, he stopped, you know, usually he's on the move while he's talking.
Right.
You know how he does.
Yeah.
And he just stopped and kind of, you know, did this looking off into the wild blue yonder. And he said, look, let me tell you where the game is going. The game is headed where there are no positions. You're not going to see ones and twos and threes and fours and fives. You're going to see five players that can just play basketball. They're going to be multi-purpose, they can play in all positions.
Right.
And he said, now, I don't know how we're going to get there, but we're headed that way. Get ready.
Right.
And then he went on with the rest of his clinic. Of course, I'm in the stands about to blow a gasket going, I've got the method to move the game to a positionless game. And by the way, now you know, Steve, why I started that story the way I did.
Right. Yeah. I mean, has it really – see, people ask me about my record and all this kind of stuff, and I don't really think about that stuff on a day-to-day basis. Have you literally sat and thought that you've changed this game? Because you have. And I'm not throwing this around. I mean, 100 years from now, it's like the flex. It's like the triangle. People are going to – in the dribble drive, people are going to talk about read and react. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I have. It's but it does.
It's mind-boggling. Yeah,
it is mind-boggling. Yeah, it has taken a life of its own. You know.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the most fun things about this is this movement is reading the stories of the coaches out there.
Right.
You know, they'll email me their stories and tell me what to do, and most of it, coach. Now look. It's really easy for me to tell you the quantitative ones.
Right. But
qualitative ones are so much fun.
Oh, yeah. We make fun of you all the time, Rick. I'm telling
you.
That's layer 47. Layer 47. I mean, my assistant coach can do – Nate's going to be listening to this. He can do a much better Rick than I can do. But it's like, you know, we just –
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
The number of layers is overwhelming at times. Like, we have narrowed it to like six that we feel like we can really do well. And then we add things to that. You know, it's like adding potatoes to the soup or carrots or something. But we've narrowed it to about six that we think we can be pretty good at.
Well, you know, that came from, again, back, this is 6 or 7 years before I ever started experimenting with the read and react, two things happened. There was a couple of things going on that kind of ingredients that went into the soup, you know?
Right, yes.
One of them was we lost a game. We ended our season by not getting to the state tournament on a last-second shot with the best player I ever coached. Best player. He averaged 28 points a game, shot 53% from the three-point line, and signed with Florida State. And the only kid in the school history to play in the Georgia All-Star game. And right. I'm thinking, I can't get to the state tournament with this kid.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I must be an idiot. Well, so my assistant and I, Dan Knutson, we were having our last supper, so to speak. pun intended there.
Right.
And I said, all right, Dan, go ahead. Tell me what I did wrong, you know. And he said, I really just got one question. In the last 2 minutes of the game, when it was just back and forth and, you know, people were fouling out and this and we're trapping and nobody can run into their stuff, did we have the best five basketball players on the floor? And I said, well, now, Dan, we had our best one, our best two, our best three, our best four, our best five. He said, nah, that's not what I asked. Did we have our best five best? And I said, Danny, if I did that, we can't run our system. And here it came. He said, maybe there's something wrong with a system that doesn't allow you to put the best five players on the floor.
Light bulb. Yep.
Boom. Yeah. And now he went on with other questions, but for me, it was like a thorn that got in my brain. And I remember thinking, where did I get this? Why do we have to have point guards and fives and posts? And where do we even get this language from? And what, you know,
right.
It just started making me question everything. Am I kind of blinded by tradition? You know,
right.
Why can't we do that? Hey, when you go to play pickup, do you say, well, I'm picking you because we need a three, a slasher?
Right.
No,
I know. And the thing is, and I've ever since we started doing it, I've been trying to think about where it started. Was it the Patino Kentucky teams? Was it Magic? Was it Michael Jordan? I mean, because he had Cartwright, so he had a five. I'm just trying to think of where the shift kind of happened, because usually it happens at the NBA and collegiate level before it gets down to us.
Right.
And
right.
I really haven't been able to narrow when that, because if you look at Villanova, you look at the teams that were in the NCAA this year, it's like there's obviously some big boys out there that are probably quote unquote fives, but they can all shoot. They can all handle the ball.
They can all pretty much play anywhere.
Right. Yeah.
What I loved about watching them is I'm telling you, they did some really good stuff. If you did not know the read and react the way you and I do, Steve,
right,
you might watch Villanova and go, hey, I think they're running that read and react thing.
Right. Oh, yeah. And you got to be able to shoot the ball, though, too.
made shot covers a multitude of sin, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And I tell my kids all the time, anybody can become a shooter. Not everybody can become a scorer. But shooting is just repetition. It's like lifting weights. You just got to get in and do it, you know. All right, so we'll do this out of order. So I'm going to ask you my read and react question.
All right. Great.
And then we'll go back. All right. So off-season recommendations. Do you have off-season recommendations for people that run read and react? Things that you can do.
Well, you just named it. Yes, because as you know from experience, the read and react will create shots for you all over the floor. Yeah, layups, inside, three-pointers, two-pointers, off the – you name the type of shot.
Right.
And getting good shots, good quality shots, is not the problem. It's that ability to put the ball in the hole.
You know, right. Do you have a shot clock in Georgia?
No.
No, so we don't either. So there's times that we'll come down and it takes us 45 seconds to get one, which is crazy. Hey everybody, that's the end of part one talking with Rick. I hope you really enjoyed that. I know I did. There's much greater details coming in the next couple days. If you're liking these things, go subscribe and like, leave us a review, tell us what you like, and hopefully it's a 5-star. I would also ask you to go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. It's what allows us to bring these great podcasts to you. So have a great week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.